Welcome back. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Laura Weens. Folks, don't forget to check out our new website, www.theunionedge.com. We also love hearing from you. So if you want to hear some more about a particular topic, you want to give us some feedback, you can always write to us at requests@theunionedge.com. And, of course, you can check us out on our Facebook and Twitter accounts as well. Look for The Union Edge. Joining us today, we're really excited to have Rosalie Keach. She's the Chief UN Observer for the League of Women Voters. Welcome to the program, Rosalie.
Thank you.
So talk for just a minute about what the League of Women Voters is. We're excited to have a partnership with you guys to come on the program and talk about the work that you've been doing. And I think it is more important than ever that people really exercise their democratic ability to participate in the political process. But talk to us a little bit about the work that the League does.
Well, basically, the League is working on behalf of people everywhere to ensure that our democratic principles, our governments are open and transparent, that we're aware of the situations and issues, whether it be in the local community, in the state, or in the nation, and that we're actively engaged in advocating for those things that we believe in. The League has an approach, and we're almost 100 years old in 2020, we will be 100.
Wow.
But the approach has been a very carefully considered one, and that is understanding the issues and doing research and understanding both sides of the issues, and then reaching out and speaking about it. So we use those methods quite extensively in our work, especially at the UN.
Well, I had no idea that you guys have been around almost as long as women have had the right to vote, but I guess it makes a lot of sense.
We were born out of that. So that effort, Carrie Chapman Catt, our founder, was a woman suffragette along with others. And I'll speak about another very famous woman of that time who was our first advocacy chair, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think you have a very illustrious history and I think some very important members that folks should be learning about in the school system for the work
Absolutely.
That they've done.
I totally agree with you. Civics education is a very important part of our democracy and understanding our Constitution, how our government works, how laws are passed. How things get done is also a very important part, and I think it is a missing element in so many schools today.
Absolutely. Well, so talk to us a little bit about the League's specific relationship with the United Nations and kind of some of the work that you guys do in that field.
Yes. In 1944, we were asked by President Roosevelt at the time to work our magic. I mentioned his wife had been our first advocacy chair. We started the Take It to the People campaign. And at that time, we flooded the U.S. State Department with 1,000 pieces of literature a day. And you may remember that the U.S. State Department was not in favor of the United Nations and that the League of Nations had failed about 20 years previously. So we did an advocacy campaign to U.S. senators as well as throughout the country, and that resulted in the ratification of the U.N. Charter by the U.S. Senate.
Wow.
Later in 1945, we went to the San Francisco conference, and our representative was Anne Hartwell Johnstone, and she was asked to assume leadership in creating the Commission on the Status of Women, which represents women's rights throughout the UN organization, and it's a very active organization still today, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, too.
So why was it that the League felt so strongly about getting involved in the United Nations? It seems like you guys really led the push to make sure that we were part of the international body. But what was it specifically that you felt was the most important reason why we were a part of it?
Well, the UN is a place where talking instead of guns can work, you know, instead of violence. And it's an area where it's the only area in the world, really, where all of the nations of all the member states, as they're called, all the nations, and today there's 193 of them, can meet in one place to discuss issues of the day. You could look at the Ebola solution that was done. You can look at the work that's done on eradicating HIV and that kind of work. But it also works on economic and social issues, and where it's very important to be part of that dialogue, we feel. It's the one place in the world where that happens.
And there's some work that's being done specifically around labor issues and human trafficking. I know a lot of times when people think about human trafficking, they think about sex trafficking, which is a terrible scourge and I think a really an important issue that the UN works on as well. But you guys have been working with the United Nations on addressing the issue of human trafficking and labor. Can you tell us a little bit about what that work looks like and what the problem is?
Yes. First of all, for everybody, there's a singular definition at the UN, and again, these things are important because it provides the framework on which nations act. And the definition, according to UN terminology, is modern slavery, human trafficking, or trafficking in persons, has been defined as the act of recruiting, harboring, transporting, providing, or obtaining a person for compelled labor or commercial sex acts through the use of fraud, force, or coercion. And that word coercion is extremely important. That is the, you know, the word, the words in the Palermo Protocol, and that sets out the legal framework defining human trafficking and allows the governments or the member states to put together programs to address it. We've done a number of things in that regard. And again, we do it from a perspective of studying the issues, and adopting a policy about this, and then speaking out or acting. And we find that that enhances civil discourse, which is missing so much in our environment today. But that civil discourse is important when one understands the issues in depth. So we work with human trafficking, and in 2014, the League of Women Voters adopted a formal policy on it. And it probably won't come to any surprise to your audience or yourselves that we're against all forms of human trafficking. We also have developed a comprehensive strategy to eliminate exploitation of children at major events. We worked with the Special Representative to the Secretary General to prevent violence against children, and better known as the SRSG. And she and her staff worked with member states to include that strategy in their national action plans. Which also included Brazil at the time, which used it in the 2014 World Cup. And that strategy was also used in fighting exploitation of children at the Super Bowl in 2014 in New Jersey with the New Jersey Attorney General's office and its task force. It has a human trafficking task force, and I'm very honored to serve as the chair of the Outreach and Awareness Committee. They're doing incredible work with working with other states and sharing their experiences, as well as coordinating efforts throughout the state to be victim-centered, not treating the victim as a criminal. Very, very important work, and to provide services for the victim. And now we're adding the push of working on the demand side of the equation. The International Labor Organization, which I'm sure your audience is aware of, is has done great statistical work, but also great work in helping to fight and bring awareness to this. They've estimated that there are 21 million people around the world involved in trafficking. And with the various efforts of the UN and the adoption of the Palermo Protocol, which I mentioned before, which defines the legal framework of human trafficking, much work has been done to around the world in ensuring that victims are not treated as criminals.
So, Rosalie, I'm going to interject for a moment because we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm interested in hearing, I think that a lot of our listeners will be surprised to hear that human trafficking happens in the U.S., and I think it was surprising for me to hear that it was there was some concern around the Super Bowl. So when we come back, I'd be interested in hearing more about what we see, what instances of human trafficking we see in the U.S., and also want to make sure we have a chance to talk about your upcoming conference in March. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more. We've been speaking with Rosalie Keach. She's the Chief UN Observer for the League of Women Voters. I'm Laura Weens, and you've been listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
It was 1973. Helen Ruddy's song, I Am Woman, was at the top of the charts. The feminist movement was in full swing. A group of Boston women office workers started talking about how they were treated at work, how men made more money for the same jobs, how they couldn't take time off to care for their kids without putting their jobs at risk. They were feisty, empowered, and fed up. They founded 9to5, a membership organization of women working in low-wage jobs, inspiring a national hit song and movie. Whether it's fighting for better leave policies, for equal pay for equal work, to ban the box, or strengthen the safety net, 9to5 is on the front lines of putting our issues on the public agenda, and they're winning big. Find out more about how they're raising the bar at www.9to5.org. That's the number 9, T-O, number 5.org.
Picture two employees at the same company doing the same job. One speaks English, gets paid fairly, and receives health benefits. The other speaks Spanish, gets paid less than half, and receives zero health benefits. That's an injustice no matter where you work, and exactly how Telemundo's performers are treated at NBC Universal. It's time to end this double standard and demand fair treatment for all performers, not just those who speak English.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Laura Weens. I am excited to have as my guest today Rosalie Keach. She's the Chief UN Observer for the League of Women Voters. Welcome back to the program, Rosalie.
Thank you, Laura.
So we were talking before the break about human trafficking, the work the Women Voters has been doing at the United Nations around that issue. And I was saying that I really am not aware of what are all the forms that human trafficking takes, particularly in the United States. And I was wondering if you could just talk briefly about that and then talk a little bit more about the United Nations.
Yes. I want to just reiterate that that there's a lot of work being done around the world on not treating the victims as criminals, and that's so, so important. But the rate of arrest and conviction of criminals is just abhorrent. It's just so low. So I think people have to realize that it's a simple fact that if even if all 21 million victims were rescued today, tomorrow there would be a new set of victims, because at $150 billion, it's just too lucrative to coerce and violate human beings. And here in the United States, that coercion takes the form of two major components of labor of human trafficking. One is labor trafficking, which I just alluded to, and the other is sex trafficking. And we think that it's, you know, somebody coming across a border and being being forced to do this. That's not necessarily the case. We have many of our victims are children. It's estimated in the United States that there are 300,000 children involved, and those are children born in the United States that are being forced to traffic themselves. Either they're threatened with violence, or their parents, or there's some reason that they get hooked up with a pimp, and you know. We've heard horror stories about children being taken out of school, going to having to forced to have sex during their breaks, and then return back to school. So there's a lot of work to be done here in the United States. And as I said before, we have to attack this not from the supply side, although that's important, but to work more on the demand side. And on the labor side, there's really just two reasons that the money is being driven into the labor side of trafficking. Either the purchaser is unaware, or the purchaser is aware and they want to do it. And for that, we need to have some laws. So the going back to the United Nations, they had a in 2015 a historical development of the Sustainable Development Goals, and one of them was to eradicate forced labor and human trafficking in all its forms. And an alliance was formed by the International Labor Organization on 8.7, which refers to the Sustainable Development Goal. And I think the time has come. We have formed an NGO coalition for Alliance 8.7, and we are targeting working with the private sector to raise awareness and have them become part of the solution and adopting compliance and social responsibility programs in their supply chains and with service providers. We're working with the academia to teach future business leaders about the problem, and we're working with UN agencies and member states to advocate for a focus on fighting the issue of human trafficking from the demand side of the equation. Going back to the concept of the Commission on the Status of Women that I mentioned before, in 1995, this commission was started, as I mentioned, in 1945, and we actually had the first U.S. representative to it, Judge Dorothy Kenyon. But in 1995, some of your listeners may know that the Beijing conference was held, and our representative, Marjorie Cohen, advocated for the rights of girls at that conference. And as a result of the conference, 189 UN member states unanimously adopted the Beijing Platform for Action that outlined 12 critical issues which constitute barriers for the advancement of women, as well as actions that governments, the United Nations, and civil society groups could take in making women's rights a reality. Mm-hmm. And included in those 12 issues for the first time was the discrimination and violation of the girl child. So with 1995, we then get a focus on including girls in the definition of women, and that is so, so important. They are front and center in our work at the United Nations, and they are also front and center in this amazing conference that's being held in March in and around the United Nations. It's the largest conference that happens, and this year the theme is women's economic empowerment in the changing world of work. So apropos for your listeners and, quite frankly, the world, because when women enjoy economic empowerment, it's very clear that they can make vast differences in their communities. It's just so, so important.
Will there be ways that people could participate in the conference or be able to see the outcome or results from the discussions that happen there?
Absolutely. The conference is organized by the CSW61 Bureau, which is a United Nations organization made up of representatives from the member states, from the permanent missions there, UN Women, other member states, as well as a group called NGOCSW. And we're a member of that, and we're actively engaged in organizing this forum, which is the civil society component to the conference. People can go out to the ngocsw.org website and see work about, can see the links to join in at the conference and also start following some of the activities remotely. That will be webcast on unwebtv.org. We have links to that on the website.
So the listeners could go to ngocsw.org. There's no space or dash between them, right? ngocsw.org. And then they can watch a live stream of the proceedings at unwebtv.org.
Yes.
And is all of this going to be linked to the league's website as well?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But so NGO I could talk to them about that.
Okay. Wonderful.
Good idea. We want to ensure that we're not only working and organizing it, but we want to make sure that the voices of civil society regarding the priorities and recommendations of the theme are heard in the drafting, adoption, and implementation, and that word implementation is so important, of the outcome document. The other area that people can get involved if they're local to the New York City area is we're organizing two events during CSW 61. We have a workshop, What Policies Can Support Women's Economic Empowerment, Setting Up Forums and Debates in Your Community, which is, as I mentioned, a workshop and very hands-on. And then we're having a panel discussion featuring member states, UN Women, and the Interparliamentary Union on the business of parliaments, achieving women's economic empowerment, and why 30% women representation is important.
Unfortunately, Rosalie, we're coming up close to the end of it, so I want to emphasize that you guys are helping to host two events, one on supporting economic empowerment of women, and then the other with a panel of experts in this area. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So one more time, how can folks find out more about what's going to be happening in this upcoming workshop and more about the work of the League of Women Voters and their work at the United Nations?
There's two ways. There are websites, ngocsw.org, and to watch the proceedings, unwebtv.org. And then also, if you want to attend the events that we talked about, you can go on to NGOCSW's website and participate, click the link to participate in the conference itself.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry that we have to wrap up so soon, but the work that the League of Women Voters has been doing around education and really targeting the demand side of human trafficking and really working to address the ways that it impacts women and girls is particularly important, and we really appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Thank you. You know, the League values its partnership with the UN, its agencies and member states in helping to achieve the promise of the UN Charter making We the People's a reality where no one is left behind. For as Eleanor Roosevelt said, the future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams.
Absolutely. Well, Rosalie, we have to have you on again, but we love talking to you. We've been talking with Rosalie Keach. She's the chief UN observer for the League of Women Voters. Folks, you can also go online to find out more about the League of Women Voters, one of the partners here at the Union Edge. We appreciate having you on and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much, Laura.
I'm Laura Weems. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.